What sort of products did you have on your farm? Did you grow or did you have dairy cattle?
Yes, we had dairy cattle, but you see, it wasn't, we weren't specializing in anything, much of anything, you see. At first, well, we had grain and a few cattle, you see, it was mostly dairy farm, but then 40 acres is too small to make a living on. So my brother was an auto mechanic, and then he was he sold car. He went into a business himself, and he had the auto service in De Pere. He and Mert Snow were in company together. They sold Dodge and Plymouth cars, Dodge and Plymouth cars, and the Dodge truck. And then afterwards. Well, you see, after World War II, cars didn't sell so well anymore. And during World War II, you couldn't get cars. So he went into Massey Harris Farm Machinery.
Oh, I see.
So he sold Massey Harris combines and tractors, so on, for maybe 50
that
miles around.
That was your brother that was younger?
My brother. He's dead now, but he died the last Thanksgiving. Wait, yes. 2 years ago, yeah, a year and a half ago. But he was a Massey Harris dealer in De Pere for a good many years.
Yeah. When you did raise milk, when you did have milk on your farm, did you sell that or did you
use it yourself? Yeah, we sold the milk, yeah. And I did carpenter work. I did carpenter work for...
You? How old were you when you started doing that?
Oh, about 26, 27, something like that. Yeah. I started working at Green Bay, and then later I joined the union, and I joined the union about 30 years ago.
But you still had a farm at that time then?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So you were working the farm and doing carpentry work at the same
time? Double duty.
Oh. So
I worked for 25 years in the union. Well, I was in the union. And I'm still in the union now, but I mean, I still pay dues, retired dues, you know, but I don't work anymore.
Oh,
I'm going to be 72 in another week.
Congratulations.
Yeah, well, third of March, 72.
Do you know if your grandfather continued making bricks after your father died?
Oh, no, my grandfather died 2 years before my father.
Oh, so who did you say helped with the farm then after your father died?
My mother's father.
Oh,
I had two grandfathers.
Yeah, right. Most people do. So he came on the farm and...
No, you know, they were neighbors, you know, plowing and helping with the seeding. And then when we were about 12, 13 years old, something like that. We bought horses then, and we started working our own farm.
Yeah, when you were young on the farm, maybe up to about age 10 or 12, what sort of work did the children have to do on the farm?
Oh, milking, cleaning a barn, throwing hay down, and then helping by my grandpa's place whenever we could, too.
I see. Did you ever make butter?
My mother used to make butter, yes. My mother used to make butter when we were small, and we'd sell it to some of the neighbors then, you see, in the jars like that. Yeah.
What kind of work did you do in the fields?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, plowing and making hay and harvesting the crop, you see, and so on.
What was it like to make hay? You know, what was the process for making hay?
Well, you have to cut it. Then you have to rake it up, and then you have to load it on a wagon, haul in the barn.
Oh, it dried in the barn then? Or?
No, it dries outside.
Oh, you let it dry in the fields?
You dry it in the field. Oh, yeah, sure. Oh. If you make a pile of wet hay, it'll spoil.
Yeah,
it'll rot, or it'll even burn.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wait.
I wanted to know about what was the effect of getting electricity. What big changes were there when you got electricity on the farm?
As far as that goes, well, we had lights and power.
What did you use like for, how did your mother wash clothes before electricity, and what did you use for lighting?
We had gasoline motor on a washing machine, oh. Maytag with a gasoline motor on there, a little motor. You stepped on the pedal, you know, and started off, you know, gasoline motor. Yes, and then for lights, we had those Coleman lamps.
What Coleman. Fuel did they burn?
Kerosene in those Coleman lamps, you see.
I see.
Yeah, that gave a white light to.
What was the layout of your farmyard like? How were the buildings arranged in the farmyard?
Oh, we had a. Well, I couldn't say how they were arranged.
Well,
they
what were the different buildings that you had?
Well, we had barn, machine shed, and granary, smokehouse. For a time, there was an oven, too, but then we took that down, you see.
Yeah.
That oven and pump house.
Hmm. Did you have a summer kitchen?
What?
A summer kitchen?
Well, the house was the house was built, a log house, brick veneer, with our own bricks, from our own bricks,
right.
And then at the time of the Peshtigo fire, they had added an extra room on the side that was they used it as a kitchen and two bedrooms afterwards. After the Peshtigo fire, and my grandfather, the one that we mentioned there about making beer, his mother had died the February following the Peshtigo fire. And they had an extra heavy snowstorm at that time. It's about 4 feet of snow on the level.
Yeah.
And the roads were all blocked. They kept her a week before they could go to have her buried.
Oh.
And somebody came over and made a box. They couldn't get a coffin, you see, if I suppose. Or anyway, I don't know, they didn't have a coffin. So somebody came and made a box for her. And made a little kind of a sleigh, and they kept her in that addition to the house, and that was been in 1872, you see, or 1873, and they kept her there for a week till the storm abated a little. Then they went straight across like that to where the cemetery was, and everything was covered. You see, you couldn't tell where or what in the cemetery, but they figured, well, no, right from this building here over to the, and this on this angle here, there's nothing buried here anyway. So they made a hole there, and they buried her there.
How did they dig a hole in the winter like that?
Well, you see, it was under the snow, I suppose, no frost, you see. So they shoveled the snow over, and they buried her there, away from all the others, because she, they didn't know. They couldn't locate the grave, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that much about her.
What were funeral services like back then? What happened when someone died? What sort of funeral services did they have?
Well, I suppose they had. If they had any funeral services, it must have been afterwards, because you see, the priest. There was no priest there, I don't think, at that time. You see, and I suppose they just took her there, and we'll bury her, and then we'll have a mass later on, or so.
Did they have a wake at the house?
Yes, they usually did that until, I remember yet going on a wake, you know, they stay there till some would stay till 10, 11 o'clock, you know, or 12 o'clock, and then they'd go home, and maybe half a dozen would stay till morning, then stay all night, you know. And those that stayed all night then went home in the morning, and those from the family would be getting up then, and so on.
What was involved in the wake? Just sitting with the body?
Just sitting, talking, chewing the rag.
Yeah. Kind of to comfort the family, probably, or...
It seemed as though, it was as if we don't want to leave the body alone, you see, but I don't know what significance it had or anything. It's altogether different in Europe nowadays than what they do out here, you know. You know, when our people, when I mean the people that came over to our place here from Belgium, I took them to Malcor's funeral home, and I took them to show them the mausoleums, you know, in Alloway and over here.
Over up on Bay Settlement.
In Bay Settlement. And, well, my God, how long can they stay in that coffin?
Oh.
Well, maybe till hell freezes over, I said. Yeah. They stay there forever, you see, till it rots out, you see, or maybe, as long as they want to stay in there. Well, yes, but, well, that was all, it couldn't be, you see. We took them to see the mausoleums, too, but, and they put them in there, but for how long, then? There's no limit, I said. They can stay there as long as the building stands up. And, well, how do you do it out there? Well, we lay them for 2 days, we lay them on the bed. Just, you know, the way they are. Yeah. No embalming, you know, lay them on the bed.
They still do that now?
If it's, yes, even now, sure. And then what do you do then after a couple of days? Well, we put them in a plastic bag, tie the bag up, put them in a box, and take them to church. And then we bury them, and then they're buried with, I think, something like quicklime or something. After 5 years, everything is disintegrated. There's nothing left.
In Belgium?
Yes. Only the kings and the very rich are embalmed. Oh, no, they cost too much money, you see. They don't do that. Huh. So, and then after 5 years, everything is eaten up in the box or the grave or so. They sweep it up, put it in a box or a bag. I didn't quite get what she said. And they give it to the family. You dispose of it the way you want to.
Yeah.
So it's altogether different than out here. And then I asked, the first time we went, we were in a great big cathedral, or great big monster of a thing. And I asked them, what's the capacity of this building? Said the guy, 9,000 if you want to fill it up, you know, up in the balconies and so on, 9,000. And how big is your congregation then, I said? How big is the congregation then? What do you mean by congregation? What I see, mean the people that come to this church here, come to this church. There ain't any, he says. Well, who supports it then? You people, he says. The tourists, you see.
Oh, I see.
A little dish here and there, you know, and put a little collection in, sell little trinkets, you know. I'll tell you, he says, 95% of the people in Belgium are Catholic, he says. Half of them go to church 3 times in their life. The day they're baptized, the day they're married, and then the day they die, the day they're buried. Oh, I said, how about the other half then? Well, half of the other half goes a little oftener. They'll go at Christmas, they'll go at Easter, and maybe once or twice in between, he says. But they don't pay. Well, then there's only about a quarter of the people that go to church and a little bit support the church and practice religion. Well, yes, that's about it, he says. But it seems as though the Walloons are a little more religious. But the Flemish, they don't have so much to do with the church. And I asked a fellow, John Granius, he lives on the north side there, north side of Green Bay there, mm-hmm. around St. Peter and Paul. And I asked him, now what's the idea of that? And he says, well, I'll tell you, there are three parties in Belgium, the Christian Democrats, the Socialist Labour, and the Independents. And these Christian Democrats and Socialist Labour are each about 40% of the population. The independents are usually about 20%. Mm-hmm. And the Christian Democrats, that's the union men, you mm-hmm. see. If you belong to a union, you're a socialist, automatically. And the church doesn't want to have any, the Catholic mm-hmm. Church doesn't want to have anything to do with socialists. That's why the men that work out, that belong to a union, they're not wanted in church. So maybe the woman will go, Mrs. will go, but seems as though the men don't go to church. And the farmers, you see, they don't belong not to so much of an extent to a union. They're the Christian Democrats. Hmm. And then the independents, well, they're one way and they're the other. When they're the Christian Democrats and the socialist laborers, business booms. When it's the socialist labor and the independents. When it's Christian Democrat and independents, everything drops in. Hmm. It's more like you'd say years ago they used to talk of Democrat times, you know, Cleveland times they used to say. It seems as though things don't go so good. No. And I know Mrs. Fred Strabel that lives in the north side there, across from Zuider Zee. She was there at a house, and there was across the way from the church, directly across from the church. And she saw there was a funeral in that little town that day. So she wanted to see what was going on. So the people came from two blocks away with the corpse, you know, the coffin and the hearse, and they followed behind for two blocks. They walked. When they got to the church, three men and the women went in church with the coffin. The men stayed at the doorway on the steps there and talked for 15, 20 minutes. Then they went home.
Hmm. When was that? Just recently?
Four years ago. Huh. See, so that kind of meshes that the men are not wanted in church, and yeah. If they don't want us, we don't go, I suppose.
Maybe that's something that was carried over from Belgium. It could be.
No, in here, when they go to Belgium, our bunch, you know, he's headed by Harry Schudwer and some from out towards out there. Good God, it's from one church to another and see one church
I
to
see.
Another and we have mass here and mass there. See, altogether different.
Yeah.
And but if you question them. But of course, those cathedrals, I can see where they're open just for tourists, you see, because there's no heating facility in those buildings.
Hmm.
They're not heated maybe 150 feet to the ceiling, you know, to the peak, you know, and ceiling then. Good God, some of the steeples are, I believe it's 500 feet to the tip of it. Many men must have been killed and so on, you know, building that, you know. No scaffolding like nowadays.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see the contrast. It seems as though the farmers, but of course, nowadays those farmers are in unions too, so that I don't know just where but where we stayed, the fellow where we that came over here, you see, he's the choir director in the church.
Oh, I see.
And I asked Mrs. I heard that 95% of the people in Belgium are Catholic. I said, yes, yes, yes. And that three quarters of them don't go to church to amount to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, she said, I'll tell you, the priest is just as satisfied if there are three people in church as if the church is full, she said. He never says anything, he never complains about anything like that. But you see, the priest is paid by the government.
Mm-hmm.
The cemeteries are taken care of by the government. I mean, the upkeep around the trimming and everything else, cutting the lawns and things like that. It's all done by the government. So the priest, he's paid by the government, eh? Just like an official, you'd go to a meeting, you know, if there's three people that come or if there's a dozen, well, it doesn't make any difference, eh? He's paid by the government, so it seems as though it's a different. Here, the priest, or maybe your ministers too. You know, the more people are in church, well, the more income. Eh? There might be a point there. You see,
I don't know. I was going to ask you about passing land on from fathers to children. Up in the farming area. How is that done?
Well, nowadays, too, the kids don't even want to farm.
Yeah, but back a while ago they did, didn't they?
Way back, yes. Well, one would take over and maybe take care of the old folks, you know, and he'd have the farm and pay him so much, keep him up, you know, and so on.
Was that a legal agreement? Did they ever have a legal signed paper for that? You know?
Yes, they'd have papers, but you know, there were crooked lawyers and crooked, and men would make papers, but they weren't, they didn't have all the angles, you know. I know, like in our case, my father bought the farm from Grandpa,
mm-hmm.
paid him the money, and they had a quitclaim deed. If you know more about law than I do, but he had a quitclaim deed signed by McGruer here. And McGruer was, you know, I don't know if he was shady or what, or he didn't know too much about it, but it seemed as though that was enough, you know. And then my father, well, yeah, they had that recorded. But then my father dropped dead. My grandfather dropped dead all of a sudden, you see. And my father didn't, my father, I guess, you know, he didn't want to make, you know, he bought the farm and he was going to keep the old folks, you see.
Yeah, right.
But then my grandfather died and he didn't tell my mother about it because, you know, he didn't want it to spread out so the others of the family would know that that he had bought the farm, you see.
Oh.
It would keep it quiet so it don't spread out, you know, that I had bought it. Well, I don't know why, but you see, my mother didn't even know it, you see, that he had bought the farm. So then when my grandfather died, my grandfather had a lot of money, my father didn't have any. So that's why my mother had it hard too, you see.
Oh, because your grandmother then had the money?
My grandmother was living yet, so they made an agreement. Well, my mother kind of had to buy back that farm, and without much money, you know, she had to pay off the shares, a different one, and well, she didn't know where my father's money was gone. He had money, but it was gone, you see, and Grandpa had a lot of money, but didn't know where. But then afterwards, we had our road widened, you see, and we had to sell a strip to the county or the county. And then when that came to the county, then, well, the farm still belonged to your husband, but it never really was recorded. All they had was a quit claim deed. So it came. That's the only time. That's when we found out. Maybe 25 years or 30 years after we found out then that it was, there had been a little something there, you see.
Yeah. What happened to the children who didn't buy the farm? Like if only one of the sons
bought
the farm?
Well, you see, they had a share. I mean, they were given some money, you know. I don't know how much.
And then did they go out and buy their own farm usually?
Oh, yes. My father's brothers, two of them moved to Lena, and two of the brothers moved to Lena, and one of the sisters moved to Lena, one moved to Wagner in northern Wisconsin, and one went to Marinette, one went on a farm there close to our place, so they all spread out. At that time, kids could spread out, you see. And nowadays, well, the small farms are picked up by the big farms, and you have to be big or not at all.
Yeah, I can see that. Did the parents always stay on the farm until they were real old, or did they sometimes go to homes?
Well, sometimes, no, they wouldn't have homes, you know, but they sometimes, some of them moved to Green Bay, you might say, moved, you know, come to live in Green Bay here. But most they spent their last days home.
And so did the father then continue farming with the son until he was no longer able to?
Or he'd hang around, you know, give advice and boss around maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, I was going to ask you, did you ever wear wooden shoes when you were on the farm? Did you ever wear wooden shoes?
No, except for fun, you see.
Oh.
We'd run around with wooden shoes, maybe. But my mother My mother wore wooden shoes when she was a kid. They'd go to school. They didn't live too far from the school, but they'd go to school with their wooden shoes and take them off and knock them, you know, to knock the snow out, she says. And I suppose they stayed on their stocking feet then in school. I don't know, but she wore wooden shoes. But
did she ever wear them to do farm work around the?
She had a pair. She once bought a pair because that would be handy if to have around, you know, when I want to go to the barn. I don't want to put my. I don't know if it was in winter time or what, when it was slushy or so. Yeah. And I know she bought them from a fellow that made them in Champion. She paid 40 cents for a pair of shoes, wooden shoes.
How old were you then when she paid 40 cents?
Oh, that may be 50, less than 50 years ago, I'm pretty sure.
Do you remember the name of the fellow that made the wooden shoes?
Nestor De Beck.
De Beck?
Nestor, N-E-S-T-O-R.
D-E-B-E-C-K.
He lived in the old priest's house there in Champion, and he made wooden shoes and sold them for 40 cents a pair.
Did he have a general store too, or did
no,
he just
no, no, just make, living in the priest's house. He'd be fixing shoes, you know.
Oh, I see. And then did he fix leather shoes too?
Yes, he'd fix leather shoes, you know, sewing them up and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And he'd make wooden shoes on the side. And I know my mother bought a pair and paid 40 cents.
That's incredible. Did you ever have any hired people on your farm besides for making bricks?
No.
Kids,
we never hired help, no.
I see. I wanted to ask you about your experience in school. Did you go to a one-room schoolhouse?
One-room school all the time, yeah. And I went through the eighth grade, that was all.
The eighth grade?
Well, I went through the... I went a little bit to vocational school here, you know, when it was down around School Place there, Broadway, I guess it was, eh? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where the vocational school was. Uh-huh. A little bit carpenter work, you see.
Oh,
study carpentry,
nice.
A little bit, yeah. Just brush up a little bit on some subjects, yeah. You see.
What school did you go to? What one-room schoolhouse did you go to?
Mount May School. It was called Mount May School. It was... On T, about 3 miles north of New Franken.
Oh, now that was a public school, wasn't it?
Public school.
Who was your teacher?
Oh, I had quite a few teachers. You see, every year or two there was a different one. There was a Miss Everett's was my first teacher, I guess. And then there were two Donovan girls. And then there was a Nora Bodart.
Hmm.
Her folks used to run Bodart House on Main Street in Green Bay here.
Hmm.
But she was a school teacher for a good many, I bet she was a school teacher for over 20 years at our school.
Hmm.
She was a good teacher.
Huh. I remember a lady I talked to in New Franken, Ethel Greeling.
Greiling.
She said, Greiling? She Greiling. Said her father used to be a teacher.
Yeah, her father was a school teacher too. Her father used to teach school, yes, around... Well, I think her father taught that school, too, at one time.
Oh, but you never had him for a teacher?
No, he was older, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Did you speak English when you first went to school?
Yes, but every chance we had, we'd talk Walloon.
Oh, really? In other words, your first day of school, you already knew how to speak English?
Yes, we knew how to speak. Talk English.
Oh,
most kids could get along with English when they start school, except once in a while there was one, you know, that the folks didn't, or maybe the mother didn't know hardly any English.
Oh. And, so your mother taught you English before you went to school?
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh,
but my grandmother on my father's side, she couldn't, all she knew was Walloon.
Oh.
But then, too, she'd play cards with the neighbor, Mike Brunner, across the street from our place. And he'd talk German and she'd talk Walloon and they understood each other, you see.
Yeah, how about that?
Yes. And she liked to play cards.
When you spoke Walloon in school, did the teacher like that?
Oh, no, no, we'd get punished, you see.
What happened? What sort of punishment?
Oh, they could raise hell.
How?
Sometimes we'd have to stay after school or something like that, talking Belgian, but...
Hmm. How did the teacher go about teaching English to the children who didn't know how to speak English?
Well, there was one girl. She didn't want to talk. She didn't want to know. She wouldn't recite, you know. So it kept on going like that for a long time, and she'd say, "Well, say this, Tilly. Say this. Say it the way I say it, Tilly." "I don't want to," she'd say in Walloon, you see. And the teacher understood Walloon, you see, but. Finally, one day, she takes a big stick, you know, and she goes and gets that big stick, puts it there, and he said, "Now, Tilly, I'll have to hit you with this big stick," she says, if you don't say what I say," she said. "I don't like to do it, but I'll have to do it," she says.
And so did Tilly say it?
And you have to say, she had to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I guess, and so on, till 10 or something like that, just the way she had said it. So she said, "What did it for 7, 8, 9, 10? She says.
Oh, so she knew it, but she just wasn't saying it.
She knew it, but she didn't want to say it. So, then she praised her, you know, that she had said it so well. And she knew that. She knew it so well, you know, and so on. So after that, she never had any trouble there.
Wow, that's one method of teaching.